and welcome to a new episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. I am your host, Katerina Buranova. Each week, we dive into a blend of topics that resonate with the soul. Whether you're an architect enthusiast, have a passion for wanderlust, want to discover holistic approaches to rejuvenate your body and mind, or are intrigued to learn about Vastu Shastra with a modern approach, you've come to the right place. Join me as I sit down with inspiring, like-minded women from various walks of life. We will delve into their journeys to discuss the challenges and moments that define their paths. So sit back, relax, and let the spark of positive energy ignite your curiosity. Today, I am joined by Professor Bruce Denning. Bruce is an associate professor of accounting information systems at Chapman University. He specializes in financial accounting, enterprise resource planning systems, and strategic information systems. Throughout his career, he has presented his papers at international conferences and has had his research cited over 3,000 times. But most importantly, Bruce helped raise me as my stepdad. Bruce, welcome to From the Honeycomb Podcast.
Thank you. I'm very happy to be here finally.
I know. You're a huge supporter of the podcast. I know you're one of the patrons of it as well, so I'm excited to have you on. And as you know, we begin every episode by sharing something that we are grateful for in the present moment. So what are you grateful for?
Well, in the present moment, I'm very grateful that I get to walk halfway home through the parking structure. Protected from the rain.
Nice. Very nice.
Yeah, that's the short term. Long term grateful, just, you know, everybody's pretty healthy and doing well these days. And so, of course, I'm grateful for that.
That's good. And in case listeners don't know, while we're recording, Southern California is having like atmospheric flooding is what they said.
Atmospheric river. Causing flooding.
Exactly. So it is very good that you get to go from work to home in a covered parking structure. And then I love that you're sharing that everybody is doing well, especially with the new year starting. So all very good things. And so, Bruce, I know everything about you, although I did learn a little bit more as I was putting together the like intro. And I mean, of course, all the awards and the presentations, and I remember so much of what you do. But for listeners who are meeting you for the first time, can you share with them your story of how you became a professor?
Yeah, I grew up in Colorado. My father was an accounting professor and an accountant. After a while, I just saw that working a 9-to-5 was not for me. And went back to school, studied accounting, which I'd always been good at. And I think it just was a natural progression. I always liked helping people. I always liked teaching. I'm always lecturing, whether it's at home or in the classroom, just naturally do that. And so it was kind of following in my father's footsteps.
And you graduated from University of Colorado Boulder 3 times.
That's right. My bachelor's, master's, and you can't beat school in Boulder.
No.
It's really nice. Yeah. And eventually there was just no more degrees for me to get. So off I left for New Hampshire.
That's right. And so you taught at University of New Hampshire, and then we moved to California where you've been teaching at Chapman University for 22 years now.
I think we moved here in 2002. Yeah. So this is, yeah, I'm finishing up my 21st year of teaching. I'll be starting my 22nd year in the fall. Yeah. I know. It's sometimes seems really short, like it went flew by, but then sometimes I have trouble remembering what life was like in New Hampshire. I mean, you were little, Misha was born, it was just almost so far away.
Yeah, a lifetime ago, really, it seems like it. For sure.
Yeah.
And so one of the important reasons I wanted to have you on is because we were talking recently about me possibly getting my MBA, which is something that Jesse, for listeners know, my husband, was shocked that I even brought up. But as a recent business owner and entrepreneur, I've had no business experience. And so somebody reached out to me on LinkedIn about some online MBA course. And I thought, you know, maybe that is something I should invest in eventually as a business owner. So I reached out to you and asked you, you know, what do you think? Is it possible for me to go to Chapman? What are the programs? And I know I have a lot of listeners now who are architects, but also a lot of people listening who want to start their own architecture firm or have an entrepreneurship mindset. And so I wanted to talk to you about getting an MBA. How can that help a business owner?
Absolutely. So the hard skills are very important for every entrepreneur, because to run your business, when you're talking to your accountant or you're trying to decide if you should borrow money or should you expand, how should you approach marketing and advertising, you need those skills. The difference between acquiring those skills yourself through Coursera or LinkedIn Learning or whatever is when you get your MBA, you also learn the soft skills. So you learn how to make a presentation, how to work with a group, how to negotiate. You learn things that you can't learn just from the hard skills perspective. Now, for a lot of small business owners and entrepreneurs, they really need the hard skills. A lot of them develop those soft skills themselves, and taking the time to get an MBA, the money to get an MBA might not be worth it. But for sure, you can acquire the hard skills yourself, but an MBA is so much more these days with career services and case studies and extracurricular and, you know, those type of activities, distinguished speaker series, the networking. Those are only accessible through an MBA that you can't get on your own.
No, and I'm definitely going through the hard lessons right now. Like, I've been talking back and forth with my accountant this week and providing documents and asking, you know, why do I need this document? What is this? And I'm dealing with payroll, my payroll service, they're wanting documents. And so it's a huge learning curve, but I can see why learning those soft skills as well, like the presentation, especially negotiating, which I think a lot of architects, we don't know how to negotiate or stand up for ourselves, especially when it comes to negotiating our salary. Overall, architects as an industry, we do make much less than people would imagine. And I think a lot of us are now looking at how can we negotiate for ourselves as well, for salaries, for our rates, all of that. But I like that you touch base on, you know, hard skills and soft skills, and how the hard skills, it's you're learning as you go, but there's so much more that you can learn in the network that you have through the MBA.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And not just the MBA. Business schools are now offering a lot of one-year degrees in business analytics, or even one-year Master of Science in specialized fields like finance and accounting that might appeal to someone who has more of a specialized need than an MBA, which is going to cover the entire spectrum. A lot of small business owners or entrepreneurs are going to need a subset of skills, and maybe just a one-year Master of Science program would be better for them than an MBA.
No, absolutely. And that's kind of where I'm thinking now where I would go. And so I'm wondering, like, the advice you would give me then for, I'm fresh out of finishing my ARE exam, so studying is not looking fun, but now I'm a business owner and I'm thinking about, you know, having that investment of getting my MBA. How soon after starting your own company, or should you get your MBA before or after, or what's kind of your recommendation?
You need an MBA once you're large enough to start managing people.
Okay.
I think when you're a sole proprietor, the hard skills you can acquire on your own, because you need to be spending your time prospecting, networking, mm-hmm. right? Those, any time you spend in school is time you could have spent, unless you consider it your leisure time. Like, if you love studying and you're going to not do yoga or hiking and you're going to get your MBA. Like, some people are like that. Education is their life and that's their hobby. And so there's no cost other than the tuition to get an MBA because they do it because they love it. Most people have to give up something to get an MBA while they're working. It comes out of your leisure time. It comes out of your little bit of your work time if you're a sole proprietor. And so I think if you are so successful, you start hiring people to work for you. You start hiring an office manager and you're managing a business. Absolutely. Those skills you get in an MBA, you know, particularly the strategic thinking. How do I expand? Where do I need to hire people versus outsourcing? Those are really skills that you need in an MBA. But right now, your focus as a sole proprietor, just starting out, has to be in those other areas. Your time is so valuable. And an MBA is very valuable because you learn so much, but everything takes time. Right. Everything has a cost in your time. And I would love for you to come to Chapman and get an MBA. But every hour you're here, I'd be thinking, oh, my goodness, Katarina could be at some meeting, talking to people, meeting people, making contacts. So it's really hard. There's never probably the right time for every person. Every individual has to consider when it will work out best for them. And for most people, it's when they're working for a company and they need to advance to a management position, and maybe they don't see the whole company because they've been working in engineering or they've been working in accounting, and they need a bigger picture and they need to learn some of those management skills that can advance their career. And those are the ones that are great for like our part-time or executive MBA programs, for example.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's so true, is finding the time. And like that, I said, maybe in like I'm in my early 30s now, so maybe early 40s, that could be something I would look at as my MBA, because it's so true. My time right now is so valuable, and the time I spend on accounting. And right now I do all of my bookkeeping, my accounting. And I've been thinking, you brought up a good point about knowing when to hire someone and the strategic planning that goes around it, because I've been thinking, okay, well, when is that time going to come where I do hire a bookkeeper, you know? And because I had a stressful moment last week where I thought I overcharged a client by a couple hundred. And so I spent all afternoon figuring out what happened, what went wrong. And I use QuickBooks. And so I went back through all of the invoices, figured everything out, and everything's okay. We're still on budget. But the stress of that and not knowing, especially because I've never taken a business course. The amount of business I've ever taken is throughout the ARE exams. There was one or two exams that I had to learn a little bit about like accrual systems. But that's over my head again now. That was in one year off the other. But it's learning how to also have, I like to say, like a business hat on, because now as a business owner, I'm making decisions also not as just the architect and as the designer, but also as the business owner.
What's great about what you're experiencing is if you do go back to get your MBA, mm-hmm. it's going to mean so much more, because you're going to think back to those decisions you made and you're going to learn something and you're going to have a real world personal situation to apply it to. A lot of people that get an MBA, they do it maybe right after their undergraduate because they're not satisfied with their liberal arts degree and they think they're not getting the job opportunities. And then they're learning the content, but they don't have the application. Whereas if you do it in 10 years, you're going to be applying everything that you're learning to what you've done the past 10 years. And you're really going to, the thing you learned about cash versus accrual basis accounting, you learn it on an exam, it doesn't mean anything. But now when we start talking about your taxes, what's deductible, what isn't, when should you spend things? Well, now you have a business to relate to, it's going to mean so much more. So we really encourage people to get at least a few years of work experience before they get an MBA, if possible.
No, that's true. And so in amongst your students, what do you notice? Do you notice there's more like the fresh out of undergrad, or are there a mix of also older students who have already had that experience?
We have a good mix. I think there's a trend right now for a lot of students to know that going back to school later in life is hard. You have a job, you have kids. And so a lot of them are getting an MBA now. And it's still very valuable. You still have all of those same sort of skills. And now what I call the opportunity cost of their time is very low because they're not giving up as much to get the MBA. And Chapman has some great programs for our undergrads where you can start doing your MBA while you're earning your bachelor's. So you only have to stay one extra year. So the time is really great for them. So we have a good amount of them. And they're also our top students. We only allow the best students into that program so that they don't impact the class negatively. So those folks are doing great, but we also have a lot of mid-career and later professionals across our different programs that are great to talk to in case studies, because they're like, oh, we did that at work. Mm-hmm. We are trying to think about this investment or this opportunity, and you have a chance to talk about it. They bring their financial statements to class and we compare them to their competitors. And it's just so much more valuable for them sometimes than someone who doesn't have that experience that's just saying, well, let's compare Target and Walmart. You know, what's their strategy? How does that affect their financial statements? But the people who are looking at their own company compared to their competitors and benchmarking is just so valuable for them. And it's just hard, though. You're 40 years old, bunch of small kids. Your time is just, it's never easy. And you just have to make the decision. You're going to do it, and you do it, and everybody figures it out. Mm-hmm. The first semester is tough, and then you figure out where you have the time, where your flex in your schedule is, and everybody gets through.
No, it sounds like more like I need to wait a little bit, especially get that real life experience with some of the things I've been learning, because yes, it's been a steep learning curve, but I can see the value, like you mentioned earlier, about having the MBA. Now, once I have this experience, I'll have so much value with it. And then there's one question I want to ask you, which is kind of a joke, because I always say everything is a write-off, or I buy something from my company and it's a write-off. Can you share with us what a definition of a write-off is for a business owner?
Sure. So when you spend money, it reduces your income, right? Your income is how much you make minus how much you spend. So a write-off is just increasing your expenses. And that sounds like a good thing. It's like, well, I'm saving taxes. But you're spending $100 on something, your taxes are, you're only saving $25 in taxes. So you're still not ahead when you write something off if you don't have to. If you have a great chair, don't let the salesman say, oh, here's a great $1,000 chair. You can write off that $1,000. Well, yeah, you get a $250 tax break, but you still paid $1,000 for a chair. And I think increasing your expenses, it seems great because it means you're paying less taxes, but you're still paying those expenses. You want to keep your expenses as small as possible, even though they do reduce your taxes. That money's gone. You're not getting it back.
No, absolutely. And that's something I think this first 6 months, first year, a lot of things were write-offs for to get my company. You know, like, it's funny you mentioned the chair. This chair is a write-off, actually.
Exactly.
It wasn't $1,000. I'm not at that budget yet. But still, that's something too, kind of going back to now I'm having those conversations with my accountant and I'm providing all of this information, the expenses I've had over the year and what's the end income at the end of the year with all of those expenses and those write-offs. But yeah, every time I buy something, I joke, oh, well, it's a write-off, or I had packages come and Jesse's like, what is that? I'm like, it's another write-off. But it is true to keep in mind that you're not actually saving the whole 100% of whatever it is that you buy.
That's right. A lot of people, I think they say, oh, it's a $100 write-off. They think their taxes are going to go down by $100, like they're going to get reimbursed by the government for something. And no, it only is reducing your income, which is taxed at around 25% these days. Yeah.
That's about what I've been guessing, is about 25% for sure. And so for other people who are listening who maybe aren't architecture firm owners, you'd still recommend the few years of experience before heading off to get your MBA. But for someone who's, I guess, not in architecture, but has an entrepreneurship mindset and wants to start, I know there's a lot of online businesses now that you can start, you know, ebooks and things like that, and a lot of, you know, Etsy stores and things. If someone has a big entrepreneurship mindset, is an MBA something also that would be helpful for them?
It is, with schools like Chapman that have a great entrepreneurship program where you can get a mentor, you can get successful entrepreneurs to talk about your ideas and get strategies. A general MBA, like an online MBA with just a general focus, probably not as valuable. As we have great schools in Southern California with wonderful entrepreneurship programs, huge entrepreneurship centers with incubators and office space you can use and free advice. Those, I think, are very valuable for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm.
No, that sounds like it would be more helpful. And then one thing I've been asking people in different professions is, have you noticed AI being introduced into accounting at all?
Absolutely. I just told my class, we had the first day of class last Tuesday, and I said, look, this is a technology class. I teach accounting information systems. I want you to use artificial intelligence because accountants are going to be replaced. Not being replaced by artificial intelligence, but being replaced by accountants that are using artificial intelligence. And they need to learn the tools so that they're not the ones that are getting replaced. AI is going to take over a lot of the remedial tasks that accountants do. And we need to be prepared for that. We need to know what it can and can't do well. And so far, accountants are embracing AI, maybe a little bit slowly because of regulation, but you can see the wave is coming and it's going to be impactful in the next, I'd say, 2 years, it'll be in every firm, and 5 years, it'll be heavily used within every firm.
Wow. And I love that you're sharing it with your students, because that's one thing, the jump from school, especially for undergraduate, to the real world. And kind of that's always, I feel like in any really major, it's kind of a shock to the system. And so I love that you're sharing with your students now AI and seeing it as a positive, because there are so many people who are thinking it's all doom and gloom, it's going to take over our jobs, you know, but you have the approach of you need to use this as a tool. And that seems to be a lot of the similarity, like similar opinions with other guests I've had on, is you have to learn to use it as a tool for in your toolbox. And so that's great that you're sharing with students, you know, embrace it and use it to your advantage.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I suppose in architecture, a lot of the filling in and background work and rendering, that's going to be taken away, but that leaves the architect to do the creative part, the brainstorming and the talking to the client to understand what fits their needs. And so maybe it's going to take away the worst part of our jobs, just leaving the best parts for us.
I think so. And that's funny that you mentioned that, is that was a business decision I had to make last year, is what am I going to do with renderings? Clients are asking for 3D renderings. Everybody wants to provide 3D renderings. It's a great way to show your design concept without, because some clients cannot read plans and elevations. They just struggle in the 2D. So 3D just works better for them. And so I explored using different software programs, thinking about learning to use new software programs. Is it worth the investment? There was one that was a third of my overall, it would cost monthly a third of my overall expenses. And so I ended up, So I put my business hat on and said, nope, that's too much. You know, my designer architect hat was like, oh, come on, it'll be fun. And then business hat said, no, you can't afford this right now. You don't even have the time to work on it and play around with it. And you don't have the size of like the project size to take on such a software. But I started to explore even using AI. And in AI, I was able to take a 3D model that I built in SketchUp, and it took, that model maybe took me, I don't know, 2 hours. I put it into an AI software, and within 10 seconds, I had 3 different rendering options.
Wow. That's, yeah.
So
I accidentally did a web search the other day in ChatGPT-4, and it thought I was asking for an image and not, I was looking for a picture online, and within a minute, I had this amazing picture that I had described in my search for the image. And it was the first time I had seen how quickly it could produce an image that I described in my search.
It is. It's pretty amazing. And that conversation actually about the renderings and thinking about it in a business hat came when we went to brunch with Sarah, who she's an architect. She'll be on the podcast, I believe, after this episode airs.
Okay.
Yeah. So she'll be coming on to talk about her architecture journey. But she's the one who kind of planted the seed in my head and said, you know, you're a one person firm. Like, exactly. You could be spending your time meeting with clients, doing design work, but instead you're working on a 3D rendering. Yes, you could outsource it, but that's also a cost, you know, for the client, and it's time as well. If you need to make a change, it's a revision, it's another cost, rather than I'd rather make it myself very quickly on my laptop whenever I need to than outsource it. Because she said, well, we could have a whole department disappear in my architecture firm because we do the renderings, but for you, it makes so much sense on a business aspect of outsourcing to AI rather than outsourcing to another company or having you personally do your renderings.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So she kind of planted the seed. And that's why it comes back to that business hat on and thinking about, you know, so many things from a business standpoint. And not just, of course, I love the designing, the creating, and I've been having fun with the business aspect of it too. Like, it has been interesting learning how to have your own company and, you know, making executive decisions about certain things, like having to decide if I should take on the software or not, you know, and I'm getting other friends who are in the architecture industry going, oh, but come on, you can use it. I'm like, well, but I don't have a firm who's backing it for me. I have to look at the overall expenses. And that's something too, as well as looking at software programs. I mean, there's so many things I need. I spend probably a third of my monthly expenses is just on software programs.
Wow.
Because you need AutoCAD for drawing, SketchUp, then you need Adobe PDF, then I need e-signatures so I can, you know, then I've got QuickBooks, and all of that encompasses so much more of my budget. So it's being mindful of the expenses.
Yeah, definitely.
And then one thing that I know I struggled with when I first started, and I think we reviewed it, is figuring out how to set an hourly rate for myself.
Yeah, I think it's really, you need to know who your competition is and what they're charging, because you obviously can't price yourself out of the market, but you also can't sell yourself short. You have to charge what you deserve for what you're doing. The years of school, the years of studying for the exams, passing the exams, it's a really high barrier to being a licensed architect, and that has to be recognized in your hourly rate. But also, you have to think about, I'm adding so much value to these people to help them, to bring out of them their vision, because they kind of have an idea what they want, But I think a good architect asks the right questions to really nail down how does that look in a concrete form. And that's almost invaluable to them because the thing you're building lasts for decades, right?
Right.
So charging the appropriate amount is because of the huge value that you add.
No, absolutely. And that's one difference. And I'm actually putting together a blog post that'll be on my professional website about the difference between hiring an architect and a designer, and especially the cost. And yes, a client may save money upfront with hiring a designer, a draftsperson, for example, but the knowledge that comes with an architect, the background, having schooling, having the exams, we're kind of molded and taught in a different way to think of it as a big picture and the details, which I think a designer or a draftsperson who hasn't gone through all of that doesn't think that same way. And so it's just a bigger investment for the client. It's, what is it, a bigger upfront cost, but it's a long-term investment.
And as a total cost of the project, it's not that much more.
No.
If you look at how much it costs to build just a small house and the architecture fee is such a small part of that. I mean, if you think of it as, well, how much is this one person making? You think, oh, it's a lot. But then you look at all their expenses. Like you said, the one-third of your cost is going for software, the office, and all those other things that you're getting with the licensed architect.
Yeah, absolutely. And that stamp, you know, all the licensing requirements, the continuing education which comes with it, and staying up to date on all of the codes and all of the requirements. That's something that now, since I'm in my second year of having my license, so I've had to do continuing education hours. That's a time commitment, and that's also some value that I bring. And so speaking of value, like, how do you teach your students to bring out the value in them?
So I'm primarily teaching accounting classes where we're talking about evaluating the value in organizations. Mm-hmm. So are they getting value through minimizing expenses, by adding value through customer service, design, research and development? And it's kind of, rather than talking about how we add value, because that's, as an accounting professor, that's really the job of someone teaching strategic management or marketing, I'm more, how do we measure the value? So where do we look for the value in a company? Why is Apple different from Samsung? Or why is Nordstrom different from Macy's? So we're more looking at how you measure the value in my class and understanding the company than me saying that I'm an expert on how to add value.
Got it. That is, because that's the hardest thing I think at the beginning I had. And I like that you brought up earlier about seeing what your competition is and figuring out where you are, and also recognizing that you're not someone who's been in the industry. Like for me, I've officially been in the industry for over 10 years, but I was an intern and a student, and then now I'm a principal architect. You know, I was a project manager before, but I can't come in at the same level as another principal architect just because of my experience as well. And it's finding that out. The one thing that was an issue for me at first is some of the, like right when I first started, is I was competing with draftspeople and designers because I was getting deck repairs and things that you don't necessarily have to have a licensed architect for. But now I've leveled up and I'm competing with other architects, but I do know I still come at a lower rate than someone who's much more seasoned.
And you can actually make the same amount of money by being better, right? Being more efficient. Mm-hmm. So if you can get more done in your time, then you can actually make the same amount of money. And then as you get experience, you'll increase your rate and you'll make even more. Mm-hmm. I'm glad to hear that's coming already after just a year of doing this. That's
Thank
great.
You. And I just raised my rates as well.
So there you go.
So it came with the confidence. It came having a few projects under my belt. And then I thought, okay, now I can, you know, one project was accepted at one of the rates. And I thought, okay, well, this is definitely a rate I can continue with, because if ever asked or questioned, I can say I do have a project at that rate now. So that definitely does help for sure, especially in the mindset of how much I value myself as well, because it's, you know, you also want to get the job at first. That was something, you know, I definitely kind of struggled with as well, as like, okay, well, should I reduce my hourly rate so I get this job? Because it could mean I have, you know, some marketing or have a client. And so, but in the end, I think I've been really trusting my gut. And I know I'm also into like crystals. Like I have you're going to get a kick out of this. I know you don't believe in this. I have a crystal I take with me to client meetings. I think it's Avertine, and it's a green crystal, and it's supposed to help with like finances and like getting abundance and like manifesting abundance. And so I use that crystal when I go to client meetings, and I've noticed when I have that crystal in my purse, the meetings go very well.
But that's okay, because that's the placebo effect, right? That's, you have that confidence because you know the crystal is giving it to you. And so, yeah, I think that's, maybe you'll cut this out. But what I don't like about the manifesting is then people don't take credit for the great things they do, because they said, oh, it was the manifestation that got me this thing, not my hard work, not my effort, not my ability. And that's what sort of bothers me sometimes about, well, I manifested this. No, you did it because you laid out a plan, you had a goal, you worked hard, you got the knowledge, and you went through the steps to do it.
No, absolutely. And I think that's where like my manifestation, even like my manifestation for goals this year, is having steps to get there. But at the end, you can say you manifested it. But I agree with you. There has to be, you do need to give yourself credit. And that goes back to giving yourself that value as well. Because I think it's, you know, you can say, oh, you know, it is the crystal. It was all the crystal. But it is true. And I like that you said it's a placebo effect. Because that really, it is. It's kind of like, well, I have this crystal. Of course, it's going to go well. And then I don't think about it. And it goes, ends up going well. So it's, I don't know if you'll be teaching about manifestation and crystals in your MBA courses.
Probably not.
So if there's someone listening still right now and they're thinking, gosh, you know, I don't know if I should get my MBA still, what is your piece of advice for someone who's still on the fence about getting their MBA?
Talk to someone in the MBA admissions office, because they'll evaluate your situation, what sort of things you want to accomplish, and whether an MBA will be able to help you. You can read 100 web pages on should I get an MBA, and a 5-minute or 10-minute conversation with someone just to explore your options, the different kinds of programs, the other degrees you might not have considered, just, you know, sitting in on a couple of classes to see if it's sort of the learning environment that you choose. You don't have to make the decision by yourself. The admissions teams are there to help you find, is this the school for you? Are you going to get out of it what you want? So I would visit a school, just say, hey, I'm thinking about an MBA, can we just talk about it? And they'll be so happy to talk to you.
No, that's great advice. And I think how you mentioned even earlier about how there's, you know, entrepreneurs who have so many ideas and, you know, maybe don't have that business background, but there's just MBA courses for whatever you want. Like if you're thinking about, like for me, I could see myself finding a course that is kind of geared towards business owners and someone who already has their business rather than someone who, you know, wants multiple businesses or multiple ideas, things like that. It's just, so there seems like there's different avenues you can take, which I didn't know with the MBA. I just thought, oh, you just got an MBA. But it sounds like there's so many different avenues that you can take.
And each school has sort of specialties where they're really good. You know, sometimes Chapman will be the best school for you because we're really good in analytics and entrepreneurship. I would like to say accounting.
Yes.
But if you're going to go into, you know, some other fields, then UCI or UCLA or USC might be a better fit. So find the school where you have that's going to help you reach your goals.
Very true. Very true. And doing the research and figuring out, you know, where is it that you can benefit from it? Because it seems like the MBA is definitely, it's just like AI. It's another tool in your toolbox for you as a business owner, especially, you know, like I said, I'm the business department now. I'm also the architecture department, but the business department sometimes needs a little bit more help. I know I've reached out to you for questions, or I've Googled stuff, or I've used ChatGPT. I'm like, what does this mean? Because there's a lot that goes into having your own business and becoming an entrepreneur, and there's so much to learn. And so getting an MBA just really seems like it's just another tool for you to be able to accomplish and grow, especially like you mentioned earlier in the episode, you know, getting your MBA once you start managing people as well, because you're making different decisions. Where for me right now, I'm in like the baby stages of having my business. I don't necessarily think like an MBA would, like going back to even the time, you know, again, I guess that goes all back down to the value of, you value your time. An MBA is an investment, but at the moment, it's not an investment for me.
Yeah. If you had gotten your MBA right out of undergrad and maybe done the MBA while you're studying for the exams, you'd have all those skills and you'd be using them. That would be great. If you get it in 5 years, that will be great. If you just rely on outside experts, that will be great. There's so many different options. You just have to explore what's right for you. There's no one answer for every person.
I think that's a great way to end the episode, is just leaving it open. Just, there is so many avenues you can take with getting an MBA. And so, Bruce, where can listeners find you?
So I'm on LinkedIn. Luckily, there's just one Bruce Denning, D-E-H-N-I-N-G. So if you Google Bruce Denning, it's me. So on LinkedIn, I have an Instagram that's active when I travel. I have Facebook, which is more just kind of keeping up with old friends. But LinkedIn is really where I don't post that much, but I do read my direct messages. I do spend a lot of time following people and learning. And that's where a lot of the cutting edge knowledge is being shared these days.
Really? I do. I have noticed that LinkedIn is something I've been going to more often now, because the posts have been more interesting and just more of what I'm interested in learning, especially on the business aspect.
Yeah. And if you want to learn more about artificial intelligence, I can plug a newsletter I subscribe to called The Neuron. And it kind of is a one page every morning, what happened in the last 24 hours, and then a feature article. And you can find out about the different tools that are available, sort of what is coming out, what's new in cell phone AI technology is a big thing now. The new Apple Vision goggles, those have AI embedded in them. And so the Neuron, no affiliate link, no money for me, but I read it every day. And that's sort of how I at least know the difference between ChatGPT and Copilot and Bard and Gemini and sort of the different tools that are available.
No, that's great. I'll definitely link that in the show notes for listeners. Well, Bruce, thank you so much. This was really insightful, and I hope everybody listening has learned a little bit about getting their MBA.
Awesome. Thank you for having me. It's been a dream.
Oh, well, good. Glad to make your dream come true. Thank you for listening to this episode of From the Honeycomb Podcast. As we conclude, I want to express my gratitude for joining me in today's episode. I hope you have found it insightful and inspiring. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and click that like button so you never miss an episode. And don't forget to share this with your friends. You can follow me on Instagram at From the Honeycomb Podcast, and you can also further your support of From the Honeycomb by visiting the Patreon link provided in the show notes. Your contribution helps make more episodes possible. And lastly, don't forget to subscribe to my monthly newsletter, A Spark of Positive Energy, that comes out on the 7th of each month. Thank you so much, and see you next Friday.